What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. Today,
President Biden is hosting the Japanese Prime Minister at the White House, U.S. Ambassador to Japan Rahm Emanuel, on managing a mutual frenemy, China.
You want international capital. You want actual business leaders investing and growing your economy. You cannot cheat and steal the way you did for the last 10 and 20 years.
The next step in the creator economy. Viral YouTube sensation Dude Perfect shares insights on their nine-figure investment and reveals how many tries it takes to nail a trick shot.
Pretty much any time between one try and 3 days, and the answer is somewhere in there.
Is it the rise of the computers? Elon Musk says that AI will outsmart humans by the end of next year.
That's commentary on the intelligence level of the AI or on the humans?
I'm CNBC producer Zach Felici. It's Tuesday, April 9th. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Joe is off this week.
Meantime, we talk about AI practically every, 20 minutes on this show.
Somehow, probably more frequently.
Even more frequently than that. It could be a drinking game. And we're going to continue that game right now in a different way because Elon Musk is speaking out about artificial intelligence in an interview on his platform X, Musk saying his guess is that we are now going to have AI that is smarter than anyone human, probably, he says, by the end of, you ready for this? Next year. And he said within the next 5 years, the capabilities of AI will probably exceed that of all humans.
I don't know if that's commentary on the intelligence level of the AI or on the humans.
Ooh, burn. I don't know. But look, a year from now, that's fascinating. If it could really be that smart that quickly. You know, Sam Altman has talked about ChatGPT-4, at least, as what he calls sort of an incompetent helper, which is to say that it's good, but they're a little incompetent. Right. They always do something that's like a little wrong, like the answer is not always exactly the way it's supposed to
right.
be. So, yes, are we away, a year away from the incompetent helper becoming a very super competent?
But if that's the
superhuman,
case,
I don't know.
If that's the case, if Elon Musk sees it as being smarter than any human by the end of this year, incompetent helper is going to get a very quick
right.
upgrade.
I may have missed it. I think we 5 years for smarter than anybody, right?
But smarter than, what is it? Smarter than, you're right. 5 years is smarter than
I think
than
he thinks it's going to be, right. Smarter than some humans or a human
than
in a year.
Than any one human, but than any one human.
Human.
Right. But if it's smarter than anyone human, you're still going to have a better than an incompetent helper, I think.
This is true. I don't know. It's possible. I mean, at the rate this stuff is going, I think I was recently just playing with Claude. Which is the Anthropic version of ChatGPT, and it's better. I mean, it is materially better. It can do stuff that's pretty shocking.
Is it, you know, how you can have the smartest IQ person around, and they're not always the most
and maybe not the most
street smart person, and they don't have EQ.
We haven't gotten to the point, and this is what I think is going to happen in the next year. We haven't gotten to the point where it's doing. It can do multi-step problems, but we haven't gotten to the point where it's doing like a 10-part. Sort of 10 permutations of things that all have to happen at the same time.
Right,
and just the
emotional levels too, being able to read people. I don't know, maybe it's there, maybe it's not.
I don't think that part's there yet, though I think Claude is actually better than most of the others on that stuff. In fact, people are using it. We've talked about this before, about the psychology. For psychology and other things.
Somebody to talk to, right.
In a way that's different than ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I don't know if you stayed up last night to see this.
I did not.
I watched the first half.
Okay.
About at halftime because it was a late game. Didn't start until 9 Eastern time. But this was really something to see. The first half was pretty close. That's not what happened at the end. UConn actually winning the men's NCAA championship in a very dominant fashion in that second half. It becomes the first team to win back-to-back titles since Florida back in 2006 and 2007. The Huskies beating their opponents in the tournament by an average of 23.2 points, really dominating this entire time through the NCAA brackets. Purdue star Zach Edey scored 37 points. That was the most points ever scored in a losing effort in a national title game. He was pretty phenomenal, but UConn just had waves and waves of players who wore him down. The defense focused on taking away scoring opportunities from the players surrounding Edey. That was a strategy that really paid off. And again, in the beginning, they have two big men who were playing on this. Edey is so dominant and was able to score 20 points within, you know, the first minutes of the first half on this. But really, they exhausted him, and UConn had this strategy, and it's just waves and waves of going through it. An amazing effort all the way around, really something to see. In the meantime, record ratings for the women's tournament. Sunday's championship game between South Carolina and Iowa drew 18.7 million viewers. That made it the most watched basketball game, men or women's, college or pro, since the 2019 men's title game. It was the second most watched women's sporting event outside of the Olympics, behind the 2015 World Cup final between the United States and Japan.
Google is looking to turn down the heat on its employee message board. I imagine a lot of companies are trying to do that, as tensions have been simmering over the war in Gaza. It's according to a New York Times report that said the company planned to eliminate virtual thumbs down that employees could give to their colleagues' posts. It'll also remove metrics that allow people to see how popular other employees' posts have become. Some employees worried the changes would censor their free expression or turn the beloved message board into a dull corporate tool. But I'm
that's
sure
exactly
if you're
what it's going to do,
a manager,
probably,
you'd prefer that it's a dull corporate tool.
Right. Sounds like it's doing exactly what is intended to do.
For those of us who use Slack or Teams, though, I mean, there is the little icons that you can do the up and down and the thumbs up, and you could.
But it's this popularity contest that social media has kind of turned everything into. I guess it's one thing when you're at work and you're adults. I hate it when it's done to kids. And they're put in that thing, but it's not that nice at work either, especially if you're looking at anti-bullying stuff or
if people are thumbs down in your positions, right?
You stink, right? That's
if you're putting out your perspective, I don't know. I think if you put out your perspective online, you're sort of asking for a lot of something.
Right. So. But as a workplace, do you want to be the one that's doing that? If you're doing it online as adults, fine. But do you really want to be the workplace saying, here, let's grade and rate everybody?
Right.
Maybe not.
Cheese will be next.
Up next on Squawk Pod, U.S. Ambassador to Japan Rahm Emanuel taking a hard line on China just ahead of the first meeting between President Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Kishida in almost 10 years.
China basically has spent a decade of intellectual property theft, economic espionage. You can't have an economic competition where stealing and cheating are the norm and accepted.
Ambassador Emanuel on redefining deterrence and managing frenemies.
You're making the argument against doing business with China.
I'm making the argument that you're very clear with China.
We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to JanusHenderson.com.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod.
right here on CNBC. We are live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Joe is out this week.
President Biden set to host the Japanese prime minister for an official visit to the White House, the first such visit by a Japanese prime minister in nearly 10 years. For some insights on what we might expect from this significant diplomatic summit, I want to bring in Rahm Emanuel, the U.S. ambassador to Japan. It's nice to see you. It's been too long. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Help us
understand what you think are the most significant issues between these two countries right now.
Well, first of all, this state visit comes at a historic moment. If the last 60 years were defined by alliance protection, the next 60 are going to be defined by alliance projection. Japan has done a series of major changes in their defense posture, acquiring Counter-Strike, increasing their budget from 1% to 2%, becoming the third largest military, taking off the cap on defense technology exports, normalizing relationships with South Korea. We're now also making a series of fundamental changes from a hub-and-spoke system with bilateral relationships with multiple countries in the region to a lattice-like system architecture, strategic architecture. We're bringing coalitions of countries together, like you just saw the other day, Australia, Japan, United States, and Philippines doing a naval exercise. At the end of this visit on Thursday, you're going to have a major, significant, first time ever, the leaders of the United States, Japan, and the Philippines coming together for a historic trilateral relationship. That combination of changes in both countries will lead to a series of actions that will change the kind of cooperation on the level of deterrence, both diplomatically, development-wise, as well as on the defense side. On the defense side, they've made Japan have a new command control center, a joint center. We're going to fundamentally change the way we have a posture there so we can do a better coordination with Japan and make the most of the efforts of bringing deterrence to the theater. The second area, now that Japan is willing to do defense technology exports, is we're going to have an military industrial council to look 180 degrees what we can co-license and co-produce together, because one of the big challenges we have is our military industrial base is stretched thin and Japan's has never been on the field. That's going to be an additional benefit so we can fulfill that effort. And then major also in the area of AI research, as well as in science and cooperation between NASA and JAXA. Japan is a major science spatial partner for us in the exploration of the lunar area.
Let me ask you this, though. Janet Yellen just spent time in China, and we have talked about having this sort of, I don't know, frenemy relationship with China, where we say we want to be friends in some ways and we say we want to be enemies in others. This is a huge impact on Japan, to be honest. And
correct.
The question is whether these mixed messages, whether you can be both. Whether you really can be a frenemy.
No, here's what I think is fundamental, is that the United States will say, look, you want to have a strategic competition, we're fine. But if you're going to continue to adopt the relationship of being a strategic adversary, these are going to be the consequences and these are the steps we're going to be taking. I think that's exactly how you should approach it. China basically has spent a decade of intellectual property theft, economic espionage. I mean, take the look of semiconductors. ASML is in, obviously, is a Dutch company. There's Tokyo Electron and Canon, which are Japanese companies. They compete and innovate, and they compete against each other. China was just seen stealing trade secrets from ASML. Tokyo Electron doesn't do that. Canon doesn't do that. So either we're going to be strategic competitors or strategic adversaries. Google just discovered in the AI space that China was stealing trade secrets. You can't have an economic competition where stealing and cheating are the norm and accepted.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Ambassador, but then the question is, if that is the case, then the answer isn't, I want to be your friend. The answer is, I can't be your friend at all.
No, the answer is exactly before this goes any further, is making a choice. That's why it was so weird to have U.S. business leaders in China applauding the leadership of the PRC, having all had their, I can't tell you as chief of staff how many one of those individuals were in the office talking about trade secrets being stolen or being forced to hand over all the family jewels so they can get access to the market. And then yet China's discovered, and by our own FBI and intelligence agencies, actually spreading misinformation in the United States.
You're making the argument against doing business with China.
I'm making the argument that you're very clear with China. And that the fact is, if you're going to continue down this road, here are going to be the consequences. That's what you do before you take that next step.
But aren't we down that road then?
And then there's a second 100%.
I'll take that. Number two.
I agree with you as 100%, but let me just ask. I mean, what does that mean for American businesses? Because it's really, American businesses can't go and do that. A CEO can't show up and say, you're going to change the way you do business. The administration has to do that.
That's right. And the United States has to be clear with the U.S. businesses. We understand that's a market. They want our capital. Now, here's the strategic import. There are three Chinas, not one. There's a China that's at the core between the PRC and the Chinese people that want calm, and it's rattling really hard because they have capital fleeing and they have people fleeing. Number two is what's in the region, what I call the conflict. They're in conflict with India. They're in conflict with the Philippines. They're in conflict with Japan. And then there's the outer ring where they just want to say to the rest of the world, it's a win-win and the charm China. The three C's, charm, conflict, and calm. And there's a tension in each one of those. And in China, the basic point is their economy, for a series of bad decisions they made in years past and even currently, is on the back heel. That back heel is one of the greatest pieces of deterrence. And to the American business, here's a China that you, if you remember this, and I would say this to every leader in the United States, your research and development is subsidized by the United States taxpayers. It's not just yours. We give you a tax cut so you can do that. You cannot allow economic espionage to go just because you want access to a market. You're part of an economic strategy, and I would say to the United States, I would say be very clear also to the Chinese leaders. You want international capital. You want actual business leaders investing and growing your economy. You cannot cheat and steal the way you did for the last 10 and 20 years to leadership.
Ambassador Emanuel, that makes sense, but you're dealing with a lot of different United States, too. I can think of at least four or five different United States. One is we want trade. A second is we want cheap imports, things that are cheap for consumers. A third is we want to make sure that we have peace and safety. A fourth is we want to make sure Taiwan is free. How do we take all of those things and kind of add them up? What should be the driving goal in everything we talk to? Because we talk to so many people on the show who say, yeah, we just need to talk to the Chinese and make it easier. The other is we need to ban TikTok. What's the U.S.
Here's my view is, creating, one is redefine what deterrence is. On this show, as well as other shows, and in the United States, just public debate, we think of deterrence is what the Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier brings. I would tell you when the president brought the leaders of Japan and Korea together at Camp David in August, a historic trilateral meeting, that's deterrence. When the United States economy is growing at a pace and China is shrinking, not growing at the pace it used to, and you know, the spread between the United States and China is growing, that's deterrence. When, in fact, there's capital fleeing and Chinese middle-class families and others are fleeing, that's deterrence. And having a more global approach and saying there's a cost to the choices you're making. Now, you took hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, but you didn't do it. The international system you were a part of allowed you to do it. Now, if you want to turn your back on it and you think raw exercise of power and intellectual property theft and economic espionage is the way you're going to go, we're not participating in it. And that's exactly clear, not just the United States. Brazil, a member of BRICS, just told China, I'm taking you to the WTO. Thailand did that. EU did that. The world is organized. So the principal strategy with China, their entire strategy, their most persistent and pernicious economic strategy is coercion to achieve political ends. Their goal is to isolate Japan, isolate an Australia, isolate a Philippines. Right. No, we're all coming together. You're going to be the isolated party. Now, either you participate in a system that helped you raise poverty and rather eliminate poverty in your country, bring people into the middle class, or you're going to return, which is what you're doing to your youth, with a 30% unemployment. You have a choice to make, and we're ready to work with you and have you be part of a system that helped you grow economically, or you can turn your back on it. Right. But when you do that, you're the isolated party, and there's cost and consequences which result in a lost generation of Chinese youth. You make the choice.
Ambassador, before you go, if you look at the polls, it is very possible that you and this administration will not be this administration at the end of this year. And I'm so curious, as an ambassador to Japan and speaking to the international community, how you discuss that very topic and how you think they perceive us and they perceive you.
Well, my joke is, at least on me, is that I've been there 2 years in Japan, and for the Japanese people, it's felt like 20. So, look, I, here's here's where I think it is, and this is an example of going back to the original question. There's two competing visions between China and the United States. China, this is our backyard. America's a declining power. You either get in line or we're going to give you like what we're doing to the Philippines. Our basic position is we're a permanent Pacific power and presence, and you can bet long on America. And when you look at the trilateral relationship that the president brought together in August in Camp David, you look at the trilateral meeting we're going to have, a first ever historic meeting this Thursday. You look at the state visit where Japan's made major changes to be a full partner. Each day, America's gaining in China's strategy of basically this is our neighborhood, get out of here. That is declining because the people of the Indo-Pacific, whether that's Australia, Singapore, the New Zealand, Korea, Japan, Philippines, even Vietnam and other countries that may not be fully there, they want a America that doesn't allow China to be unanchored in that area. And I would also say that what we're doing today is putting the roots down into the system of America's lattice-like system that has changed from a hub-and-spoke system. The people of the Indo-Pacific, the countries of the Indo-Pacific, the leaders in the Indo-Pacific want all of America. Our development, our economic assistance,
Ambassador,
our economic
investment. Ambassador, I get it. My question is, if former President Trump becomes the president of the country, does all this work get undone? Do you think it persists?
Yeah, but I think here's what the way I look at it. Yes and no. That's the simple truth. Some of this is embedded in the system, like what we're about to do on space, what we're about to do on defense. The other part, and I will say this firsthand, having worked for three presidents and worked and seen what the leadership of President Biden. What happened at Camp David is when people not only trust America, but they trust the leader, they'll go past the minimum. They'll stretch themselves politically to achieve something because of America's leadership. And President Biden's personal touch to that allowed the prime minister and the president of both Japan and Korea to not do just enough, but to do something historic. And so when you ask me, the answer isn't a yes or a no. The answer is it's complicated, and the fact is some of it can't be undone easily. On the other hand, the intangible element can be, and it starts to unravel. Nothing is ever permanent. Today we are in a better place, and China is isolated. And it's not because it just flipped a switch. China's made a series of mistakes, and President Biden and the Biden administration has made the most of those mistakes to America's strategic advantage, where our deterrence today at least has some credibility to it.
Right. Ambassador, I want to thank you for joining us. It's always good to see you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next on Squawk Pod, YouTube's viral sensation Dude Perfect is announcing a major investment in their next step in the ever-growing creator economy.
We are looking forward to continuing the trust that we've built with families for the last 15 years and just kind of turning that into an extension of the brand and creating something that can live long beyond the five of us doing hopefully water bottle flips when we're 65 years old.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC. This next conversation is all about the creator economy. Dude Perfect is a YouTube group with over 60 million subscribers. The crew is most known for their impressive trick shots and animated reactions.
This is the world's highest basketball shot.
Started in 2009, they're now 15 years into their online shenanigans. And as of today, they're ramping it up even more with an at least $100 million in new funding from a private investing firm. The dudes, as they like to call themselves, are now primarily on YouTube, but they say the infusion of cash could take them offline into retail, streaming, or theme parks. YouTubers have been attracting more than just capital. According to Nielsen, it's attracting more and more eyeballs on the TV. In 2023, YouTube on TV watch time surpassed any other streaming service, including Netflix. Here's Andrew.
Joining us right now are four of the five dudes from Dude Perfect: Kobe Cotton, Corey Cotton, Tyler Tony, and Garrett Hilbert and Cody Jones, as well as Highmount Capital's founder, and general partner Jason Illion. Good morning to all of you. It's so cool to see you. We are big fans here on the Squawk set. Let me start, Jason, with you, since you're the one poning up all the money. How'd you find these guys? What are you trying to do? What's the investment thesis here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, these guys are icons, right? They're pioneers in their space. And I got three kids that grew up watching them and following everything that they've done. And as we got to know the guys and the businesses they built, all you have to do is go stand outside of Smoothie King right now and watch the kids lining up getting Dude Perfect smoothies, or go to Walmart and get their toys. And the more we got to talk to them and the more we saw them not just being YouTube stars, but growing in so many different areas, we said, hey, we got to figure out a way to partner with them. And so start a relationship, and it turned into a rather large investment.
Guys, did you ever think that you would get an investment like this? And what do you see yourself doing with all this money?
Yeah, you know, this has been a long process for us. When we set out on this journey, we didn't even really intend to raise as much as we did or get to this point. But we found the High Mount guys, and our goals for what we want Dude Perfect to become and what it has been up to this point were very similar. And so we felt like they were going to be a great partner moving forward. And we are looking forward to continuing the trust that we built with families for the last 15 years and just kind of turning that into an extension of the brand and creating something that can live long beyond the five of us doing hopefully water bottle flips like you're seeing now when we're 65 years old. Hopefully that's still a very small piece of it, but the Dude Perfect brand has grown beyond that.
Can you just go backwards for a second and just take us back to the origin story and how this all began? Because I think people would be fascinated by it, but I'm also curious when you knew that, when the eureka moment happened, that you knew that you had caught lightning in a bottle, that something had happened here.
Yeah, we started in 2009. We all met at Texas A&M playing basketball and in some Bible studies together and became fast friends and made a video our junior year and ended up on TV and made another video and another video. And probably within six or seven videos, we got our first brand partnership with GMC, and we did a TV commercial for the World Cup and NBA Finals. And that was the first time that we got paid to do something that we totally would have done for free if, you know, if we realized that there was money out there for it that we were doing for free before that, I guess. And so we just continued to make the videos, just five best friends having fun. And I was so early on into YouTube that I don't think we had any clue of what could be. But as we just continued to do it, and as the space continued to grow, we've just been so blessed to continue to be able to make content. And that was actually 15 years ago today that Dude Perfect started. So we didn't plan that, but pretty fun timing.
I've got a production question for you, because I was just watching another video. I don't know if you consider him a colleague, a peer, a rival, Mr. Beast, this is, who is saying he's now spent something in the order of $3 million for every video that he produces. When you produce a video today, what's the all-in cost?
That's a great
We're not quite at $3 million level, but you ask if he's a colleague or enemy or whatever you said, he's awesome, right? Like, it's honestly, it's been amazing how each of the creators who've come up within the last 15 years have pushed all of us to be better. And he has raised the bar in a lot of ways. So it's been really cool to see that.
Sounds like a competitor.
Yeah, he's a competitor, I would
say.
We're
technically competitors, but we're friends with Jimmy. He's awesome. We're very pro Jimmy.
That's cool.
And so in terms of where this all goes as a brand, but also where it goes within the social media ecosystem or media ecosystem, we keep talking about YouTube. I'm so curious, by the way, what you think is happening with TikTok, which I know is a platform that I imagine you have to care about to some degree. How you see all of your content getting to people in the future?
It's been fun. This last year, we launched the Dude Perfect streaming service, which is a Dude Perfect app that's available everywhere. And the response has been unbelievable. The premise behind it was simply that we want to make the most trusted entertainment on earth for families. And families now can watch Dude Perfect content with clean ads that are, you know, pre-screened before it ever goes on our service. And we're also featuring other creators whose stuff is trusted. And so that's been a blast for us. We're really looking forward. That's one of the main reasons that we took on this opportunity, is in order to expand that. But we're really just looking to change kind of the direction that we're headed and make it even broader for families. You know, the last 15 years, people have trusted what we've done by watching it mostly. And now we want to bring experiences to them in person where people can touch and feel the fun that is Dude Perfect these next, hopefully the next 15 years.
Hey, guys, we've shown a lot of the flips, the bottle flips and other things that you have done with those videos. The stuff I love the most are your stereotypes and some of the very funny videos you put out there. Where do you guys come up with content? Do you sit around and just make this stuff ripping off of each other?
Yeah, it's definitely the hardest part 15 years in, but I've, you know, having five guys in the group total is nice because everybody has their own individual role. And when we started off 15 years ago, I was in charge of the creative and still am to some degree today. But it's very much an idea comes up. We'll go get in a room together, sit at a table, discuss it. But the stereotypes are a lot of fun because we get to involve the whole team, even outside of the five guys. We get to bring in the production guys and the editing team and let everybody kind of get involved. And I think that's been one of the fun things about this journey is just the different pieces of content that we've come out with over the years. And that's for sure a fan favorite is the stereotype series.
Okay. Go ahead. You know, sorry.
Rage Monster, I was saying to your point earlier, Andrew, you asked about our expensive video.
Yeah.
And anytime, bucket list. Anytime we rage on something, that price just goes up and up.
Okay, so here's my last one, because I think people are watching this and they're probably saying to themselves what I've always wanted to know, which is, how many takes does it take to sometimes land the either the bottle? I mean, we're showing some really cool things where you're seeing, you know, all sorts of balls landing in various hoops. There's the famous sort of David Beckham viral video where he lands the ball in the and people think it's all edited. And I know you say it's not edited. So how many times does it take to do this?
It just depends. Usually the hard ones that you think are going to take forever end up being really fast, and the easy ones take a long time. But just a couple of examples. Cody's blindfolded, world's longest shot. That was a first try. The shot out of an airplane that Corey mentioned earlier with GMC, that was the second try. And then the Las Vegas world's highest shot that we did not too long ago, that was 3 days. So pretty much any time between one try and 3 days. And the answer is somewhere in there.
I do wish that AI had come around 15 years earlier. That would have saved us a lot of effort.
Okay. Dudes, if you will, I want to thank you. Jason, we want to thank you. We'll call you a dude for today. And congratulations on the investment. We want to follow your progress, and we hope you come on back. Maybe you flip some bottles at the table here. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
And that's the pod for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Next, don't give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.